Welcome to The Stare Down, sports talk and real estate, with Sean Carpenter of Coldwell Banker in Columbus, Ohio, Bill Risser of Fidelity National Title in Tampa, Florida, and Todd Meininger of Cummins, Georgia. Listen in as they discuss the week in sports and toss in a pinch of real estate too. Now your hosts, Sean, Todd and Bill.
Hey, greetings, everyone. Welcome to another breakfast edition of The Stare Down. That's right. We're talking hash browns and stare downs. We've had a great conversation all morning about the best breakfast foods. Let's start with my friend Bill in St. Petersburg, Florida. You just got back from your typical breakfast at, what's it called, the Central Perk Cafe, like in Friends?
All close. Central Coffee Shop.
Central Coffee Shop. Tell us, what is your breakfast of choice, Bill?
Well, I'm pretty sure William Wallace, when he was rallying the troops in Braveheart, yelled this word out to inspire them to fight the British, and it was hash browns. wasn't it hash browns?
It was that rings a bell.
I think that's the word. I was floored this morning, and I'm struggling even forming thoughts anymore when I found out that Sean Carpenter doesn't like hash browns. And when ranking the top 10 potato dishes, hash browns wasn't even in the top 10. So I'm not sure I even know Sean Carpenter anymore. I'll be referring to him as Sean Carpenter from now on because it seems the better way to do it. But that's what's going on here. How about you, Todd?
I think if I remember correctly, those little potato sticks in a can beat out hash browns. If I remember correctly. A good breakfast are eggs, either omelet or just scrambled. Give me some onions, some spinach, and some cheese. Wheat toast and some hash browns. I'm never shying away from hash browns, Bill. I'm on your train there.
All right.
I didn't mention grits, which we kind of discussed about, but I'll let Sean run with that.
And you're not a breakfast meat person, Todd?
Not to get too bogged down, but I've tried to cut down the processed meats in my life due to just all the sodium intake in them. So do I love a good piece of bacon? Absolutely. But that's more of a special occasion, you know, treat. So on the daily grind, I try to avoid all that.
Bill, what about you? Breakfast meat?
Yeah. I'm bacon, ham, sausage. It's bad. Just, okay. Yeah, it's bad.
The answer is yes. You'll take any that's available, right?
Any or all, yeah.
So I'm more of a scrambled eggs and cheese guy. I don't mind a fried egg on a breakfast sandwich. I like the toast, sourdough or rye. But let's go off the eggplant or off the egg side for a minute, boys. If you had to get something that wasn't eggs, would you go pancakes? Would you go waffles? Would you go French toast? Do you do a crepe? What do you do?
I would go wait till lunch. I am not a syrup guy, and therefore I've never really gotten into pancakes or waffles or maybe a crepe if I had to choose one of those. Even though I'll raise my hand, I'm not exactly sure what a crepe is. So,
you'd go breakfast burrito and actually put it.
Yes, I would go. I would go Chick-fil-A breakfast burrito. Yes, good call.
So, in the carb-loaded category of breakfast, that's a tough one for me because I can go really good Belgian waffle, or I can go with amazing thick cut French toast. But I think when it comes down to it, just a nice short stack of really well done pancakes slathered in butter and maple syrup, that is a treat for me. That's spectacular. Because that's the thing I'm laying off the sugar. I'm trying to stay away from that. But I love that.
We have a place up here called Bob Evans, and you can get like, I think it's called like the farmer's breakfast or the traditional breakfast, and it comes with eggs, bacon, hash browns, pancakes and toast and biscuits or whatever. And it's like, man, that's a lot. It's like, that's 7,000 carb.
Meal. 2,000 calorie. You're done for the day meal. Yeah.
You gotta be working the farm if you're going to eat that. And Sean, exactly. Not that I necessarily want to wrap up, but I think I told you this earlier, three words I never, ever want to hear at breakfast is pass the ketchup. I mean, that's just, should never happen, right?
Yes. Happen. Completely agree. Unless you're 10 years old, then you can say that.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of ketchup on eggs. I see people do it a lot. Pretty much just salt and pepper for me. But guys, the reason why we're talking this is because it's kind of the typical after a late college football night on Saturday, getting up and having a greasy breakfast is sometimes the exact recipe for shaking off a Saturday night and getting ready for Sunday football. This is our second stare down in a row that we've done early on Sunday just because of some of our travel schedules. But another good day in college football. And Todd, let's start right in our in our backyard. I would say it was an ugly game, but I'm happy with the win. Let's talk about Florida's 31st win over Kentucky in a row, which happened with 43 seconds left in the game. Really happened with 0 seconds left in the game because it came down to a last second kick thanks to some bad defense and poor tackling and undisciplined play by Zuniga on the roughing the passer at just the worst time you could do that. What were your thoughts? And then we'll get Bills from a non-partisan standpoint on the Florida-Kentucky game. 28-27 Gators.
So, you know, rein me in. I could probably talk an hour about this. You'll miss your flight if you let me keep talking. So, first of all, I had a very interesting viewing experience. I'm going to try and make this brief. I went over to Buddy's house who has a Fire Stick and over-the-air antenna. And since this is on the SEC network, we had to watch on the Fire Stick. And those people who cut the cord and get rid of cable, there are some huge gaps.
Yes.
So I missed a lot of the game. And the big chunk I miss is when we started turning it around. So, of course, being a superstitious sports fan, I'm like, hey, if the picture never comes back on, we're fine. We're moving the ball. But no, the hospitality is great. It was just some viewing challenges. All right. That said, I think Florida Gator fans kind of need to take a step back. We are not an elite team, and there's reasons for that. You could blame coaching. You can blame recruiting, maybe not living up to what the hype is. But just reading Twitter and social media, I just want to tell everyone to relax. I mean, it is a night road game in the SEC versus a, I don't care what you say, a much improved Kentucky team. I mean, they have athletes on that team now. They got big linemen that push us around. It's never been easy. We've always had to come back from behind. So to be down 27-14 with, what, a quarter and a half to play and to win 28-27, yes, there's a lot of improvement to be made, but take a deep breath and enjoy the win. We're not Alabama. Us fighting for the SEC East is where we need to be right now. We could talk moving forward. We've got to get better. But as we are today, Florida, I think you need to be happy with that win versus a much improved Kentucky team.
So, yeah, I agree with you, Todd. Twitter almost forces you to get caught up in the emotion of the game because you're listening to all these different conversations at once. There's a lot of games that people have given up on Twitter, and it turns out the other way. Let's look at the Super Bowl maybe as an example.
Early, still too early.
It's too early, guys.
But the play calling, Todd, I've never played organized football. I know you have. We played on the flag football team at in college, but I just don't understand the concept of Nussmeier or the head coach. I'm not sure. We're driving the ball down the field, 8-yard run, 6-yard run, 9-yard run, you know, a screen pass, 3-yard run, and then it gets to be 3rd and 4, and they do a toss play. They toss it 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Twice they did that. That's the frustrating part for me is, like, you all of a sudden have this momentum, and then you change it.
Mm-hmm.
What really bothered me, Todd, is you know, the offense is going to struggle all season.
Mm-hmm.
I was really thinking our defense was pretty solid. Our tackling is just, I mean, every one of our secondary seems to go for, like, the knee shot where they just kind of just try and bump you with their arms.
No one wraps up anymore, right?
No one wraps up. Yep. There's so many times we had our special teams was horrible last night. I mean, we had so many times where the punt guys just ran down and just let the guy go right up a seam. Once again, we won. Let's turn it around to the other side of to the field. I talked to a couple people that were at the game, Kentucky friends of mine. They said it's never been a better atmosphere there. They said it was, I mean, the entire place was pumped from the morning when they pulled up until 43 seconds to go in the game. But it was just a dagger of a loss for Kentucky. They've lost some big ones in this series. But I'll tell you, that's Stephon Johnson, their quarterback.
He's legit, man.
He's legit. I mean, he is a solid, solid quarterback. His throws are tight. He throws the good ball. He's got patience in the pocket. That's going to be a hard one for Kentucky to overcome.
Hey, listen, all first half I was saying this is not a good tackling team. You mentioned, why change it up on offense when things are working? If we run the same thing, we're going to be the fans that say we keep running the same play, the defense figures it out. It's tough. It's tough when you have two big programs that are both trying to win, and it's just an impressive victory. We're not clicking on all cylinders right now. Got plenty of work to do, but celebrate the win. Real quick, I was watching with a Kentucky fan, and they made the mistake of chirping a little too early. And I kept saying, hey, we got a long way to go. And then when we scored 28-27, they had 46 seconds left. They were crying. Oh, we lost. I go, you got the best kicker in Kentucky history. All you have to do is get in range and you win. So it was just, you know, typical passionate sports fans. I thought it was a great game. Bill, what did you get to see much of the game?
I did. I watched a lot of it. And I, by the way, I'm going to just point out, I'm sitting out on my balcony. It's such a beautiful day here in St. Pete. And there's a dog having fun. So just let me know if the dog gets too loud and all.
Yeah, no,
I'll adjust. So
I'm a big dog guy, so I'm okay.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, we have a beagle who likes to bay, so I get it. But I was once again, really, this is my introduction to SEC football. Because as a guy on the West Coast, I knew it was great and all this stuff, but I was paying attention to the Pac-12 and local teams. And the atmosphere at these games, look, I've seen plenty of shots of the different stadiums around the SEC, but man, that looked like it was a lot of fun to be there for, you know, about 59 minutes and 15 seconds if you're a Kentucky fan. And I love that. I think that was very exciting. But you talked about it, Sean, the discipline issue. And without that holding call, we're not talking about a win, right? Mm-hmm. That game is over because that kicker is money. And mm-hmm. that holding call, which was an obvious hold, I don't think any Kentucky fans can be complaining about that. It's when a guy's trying to break away from contact with an offensive lineman, if you can't break away, that's a hold. Flat.
I think it was a knee-jerk complaint, and then when you see the replay, you're like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. They knew exactly what was going on. And I'm going to tell you what. I question the defense that was put in for that final play before the field goal attempt from 57 yards, which came up 3 yards short, 4 yards short.
On the fourth. The fourth and 11 call? Yeah.
Yeah, why, first of all, I think they thought a Hail Mary was coming. Why were three guys on the goal line? What was the point of that, right? Because all they needed to get was 15 yards, a down and out really fast, and they'd probably make that. In fact, if you get five more yards on that little completion, they're probably
You're talking about the play after the 4th and 11.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm talking about, you know, the very last play that Kentucky had to set up the field goal. Yeah. There's no way I'd have been thinking Hail Mary if I was Kentucky. It was get me the fastest 12 or 15. Now, I only got five. It just wasn't enough for the kid. So you're right. There's some questionable stuff going on with coaching at Florida. This is a top-notch program. They got multiple national championships. How can you have these kind of laxes every single week in decision-making by the coaching staff? I guess that's my big takeaway.
Well, and I think maybe, you know, he seems like a great guy. He does all the stories you read about McElwain. But then the post-game interviews, I say on Twitter, he has the best, worst interviews I've ever seen. Like, this is a guy who just coached a football game, and they ask him a question. He's like, well, look around here. Man, the blue sky is blue, and this is college football, isn't it? And it's just like life. It's like he's waiting to write a little motivational quote book that you'd see in like a Hallmark store.
Well, he's almost crying every post game, right, Sean? Yeah. And like he said, he's like, 2 weeks in a row we battled back, we didn't give up. Kind of reminds you of life, doesn't it? That was his quote.
The next week it's going to be life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. That's McElwain, right? He's Forrest Gump. He's Forrest Gump.
Well, and nice. Sean, I don't mean to step on you, Sean, but I think when you're dealing with 18 to 22 year old kids and you think you have something, you have to make mid game adjustments, hence with Felipe Franks. I mean, we put in Luke Del Rio in the second half. He sparked him a little bit after that first interception. But it's got to be tough coaching. And I'll transition it, not saying we have to leave it now, but we'll talk about Texas A&M Arkansas if you saw the end of that game. But, you know, let's finish up with Florida. But, I mean, that was an obvious case of not trusting your freshman quarterback at the end of that game.
But here's the thing, and I want to talk about that once again. Franks comes in. I know he sat out last year, but he obviously, to be a 4-star, 5-star, whatever you want to say he was, he's obviously got experience.
He's quarterback in the country.
He's obviously got game experience. The 4-minute scrambles and then not throwing the ball away. The knockdown pass that he catches in the end zone instead of knocking it down. Those are just things that I just think those are. I know that, and I've never played the game. You know, we used to laugh at Luke Del Rio was bad at even throwing the ball away because he would, you know, we used to say last year, Bill, that Luke Del Rio looks off his receiver, the sidelines too much, you know, and he would, you know, but he looked poised and composed. He brought the team to the line of scrimmage. He checked down on things. He just seemed like he was really focused on the game, whereas Frank sometimes seems like he's not sure where to go. And that linebacker comes through that you know, right over the nose tackle and he doesn't know where to go. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what they do against Vanderbilt. Now, the thing we can look forward to, Todd, I think I said it in a text to you last night. Gators now go home for three games in a row. They got Vandy coming off an absolute beatdown to Alabama. Side note, please, Vanderbilt fans, never say we want Vandy again. We want Bama again. It's just it's a bad look the next week.
No one wants Bama.
59 nothing. But then we go. Then we have LSU. Then we have Texas A&M. The Bill's going to be at.
Yeah.
So we've got some time to. You know, we got to look good against Vandy. We got to make some improvements in the tackling and special teams and things like that. But who knows? We could be 3 weeks from now talking about a 6-1 Gator team that's heading to a week off to play Georgia, and we'll know we'll know a lot more about Georgia. So let's actually segue that into the conversation to other SEC games. Let's start in the East with Georgia, kind of dismantling what I think last week was thought of as a really good Mississippi State team, right?
That was a beatdown, Sean. I had two TVs going on, Bill. I thought of you. And, gosh, that was a beatdown. Jake Fromm, true freshman.
Perfect in the first half.
21 for 28, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Wow. And even more important when you have a true freshman is he led that team, right? Poised, wasn't rattled. And you're right, Sean. All week long I've been hearing about how good Mississippi State was. All the experts picked them to win on game day. And, you know, that to me is not bad if you're Georgia when everyone picks against you. For some reason, when everyone picks the other way, I'd have a good feeling if I was Georgia. But, yeah, that was a beatdown, Sean.
So what was your SEC spotlight that you maybe picked up?
I didn't watch any other SEC games, unfortunately. Okay. I'm trying to think what I had going on. I was watching I watched Penn State-Iowa, which was a good game. I was watching that at the same time I was watching Florida.
Yeah, I want to come back to that one in a second.
Yeah, so finish up your SEC talk.
Well, South Carolina squeaks by Louisiana Tech on a last-second field goal. They missed two field goals early in the game.
Yeah.
They find a way to win. Tennessee just looked miserable against UMass. Yep. UMass. They barely hung on to win. UMass's quarterback goes out. Otherwise, maybe they have a chance to win there at the end. But let's talk about the game in the West, Todd, which started the day off. It was 11 o'clock kick in Dallas. A&M versus Arkansas. You know, these games always turn into a track meet. It was a fun game to watch if you didn't have a dog in the fight. Both coaches kind of on hot seats. Both quarterbacks maybe underperforming, but it goes into overtime. I didn't realize that's A&M's seventh win in a row in that series.
Arkansas seems a little snake-bitten versus A&M. I think, love or hate him, I think Belima, is that his last? Brett Belima is a good coach.
Yeah.
He just can't get over the hump for whatever reason. But here's what killed me watching that game is, I don't know if you saw the end of regulation, but Texas had a timeout, Texas A&M had a timeout, and they chose not to call the timeout.
And didn't spike the ball.
Didn't spike the ball. And 13, 14 seconds were off. So then they're down to 6 seconds. And it was obvious he didn't trust his quarterback to make a quick decision and get rid of the ball, you know, and try for a quick score. So they kick the field goal, send it overtime. And I just think, you know, at this point in the season, game 4 or 5, 4 quarters in, he's your true freshman. How can you not trust him to call a timeout and try to make a play? It was like he was playing for overtime. And overtime's such a crapshoot, right? I mean, it's crazy. So I thought Kevin Sumlin won the game, which is obviously makes his hot seat a little cooler. But I thought the end of the game, the way he managed that, the clock and that situation was awful. Now, he may have done a great job the rest of the 60 minutes, but that last half a minute, I thought it was horrible.
Yeah. Bill, let's roll through the top 20 because I want to get to the game you just brought up. As we talked about, Bama steamrolls Vandy 59-0. It was their third largest conference road victory ever. Number two, Clemson looked kind of lethargic against Georgia or against Boston College, ends up scoring 27 in the fourth quarter to kind of break that game open. Yeah, Oklahoma challenged by Baylor, played at Baylor. Baylor, for the first time all season, kind of brought a game to match the opponent. And let's go to that game that you watched, Bill, the Iowa-Penn State game, in a very enlightened, invigorated Iowa City stadium there.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, once again, I think a lot of the experts were saying this was going to be a tough contest for Penn State, right? Fourth ranked in the country, but Iowa, how many times they've done this? How many times have they upset a top five opponent at home?
Yeah. And they the last three years in a row, right?
Yeah, they were right on track to do it again. They'd come from behind at a rather pedestrian first half, nothing really exciting there, but they come from behind and is it McSorley, the quarterback for Penn State?
Yep.
Drove him down the field. And the touchdown pass was, I think, final play of the game to win it. Unbelievable. Once again, college football, best reality show ever. and once again, I've said this many times, if you're an Iowa fan or a Kentucky fan, this morning really, really hurts. It still hurts, and it's going to hurt for a few weeks, right? But really excited. And Saquon Barkley, oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at his numbers. 28 carries for 211.
Yeah.
Average of 7.
I think almost 100 yards receiving.
94 receiving, and I think 60 on special teams. 358 yards of total offense, a Penn State record.
That
could have been a Heisman moment right there. He's got a big game against Ohio State, and they still have to play Michigan.
Yeah.
So he plays good against those two teams. I think you can pencil him in for a little trophy.
Yeah, I like that. I like that call a lot.
Wow, yeah. You heard it here.
Yep.
He was really good last night. I mean, no matter where they put him on the field, and I think Herb Street brought it up. Did you see the very last play of the game? They call the timeout. They come back out, and, you know, Herb Street and Fowler are both saying, Barkley's got to touch this ball somehow, some way, right? Did you see the play he made to stop the blitzing linebacker? To give McSorley that one extra second to get off what was just an absolute seam of a pass.
Which every pro scout in America watches that play and just goes, oh boy, yeah, they're exactly what you need.
Smart, I mean, that block, he I think he was supposed to go out into the flat after the lineman came through in case he needed to dump it off, but he picked up that guy coming through, and that was just an amazing, amazing play.
Yeah.
I do want to bring it up because I tweet about it. Iowa has started what I think is one of the coolest traditions in college football. The new children's hospital now towers above the stadium, about six stories above the stadium. And it was not open last year. This year it's open, and it started as a Facebook kind of meme. But at the end of the first quarter, now the entire stadium turns and shines the lights of their phones up to the kids up on the top floor. They have a viewing room. Yeah. Families can go and watch. And last night, it's a tradition that there's no opposing fan that would ever disrespect it because it's for the kids, right? It's such a cool.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So hat tip to Iowa and what they've done with that. That's really cool. USC goes into Cal, an undefeated Cal program, and wins 30-20. How about Oklahoma State? A lot of talk as of yesterday morning about Oklahoma State maybe making the playoffs. And Oklahoma State does what Oklahoma State does. They got trounced by Texas Christian, TCU. Yep. What'd you think of that one?
I watched a good bit of that. A good bit. I was clicking back and forth. But from minute one, TCU seemed to have the lead and seemed to never give it up and seemed to pull away. I don't know too much about the history of Okie State, but I kind of agree with you. It's, you know, they always start out pretty good, have a pivotal game, and for whatever reason, they're not winning many of those pivotal games. So,
yeah, they're right back where they're comfortable. Going what if, you know, there's still so many big games coming up for them, but they had to be undefeated going into that Oklahoma game to have any chance, right? For
sure,
And so that's
that was the sexy preseason pick.
A lot of experts. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and then Billy, another Pac-12 team, Washington, kind of went into that game where a lot of people were picking Colorado to win, and they didn't have any problem with Colorado. They won 37-10.
Keep going down the Pac-12. Let's look at another top 20 win. How about Arizona State upsetting Oregon?
Yes, I saw it.
37-35. Yeah,
they were up almost the whole game, right?
And then let Oregon come back and take the lead with about 6 minutes to go, but freshman kicker Brandon Ruiz, who I know, he went to my son's high school.
Nice.
So I know Brandon and his older brother Blake. Brandon actually kicked the game-winning field goal in that game, and so as a true freshman, that's very cool. Two other things I want to point out, from college football point of view, two outside the Power Five schools have a really good shot at going undefeated. One is right here, University of South Florida. The other one's where I grew up, San Diego State. So tough game at Air Force, because that's always a tough game going to altitude, the whole nine yards. I think I went to bed a little bit early on that one. But the what was the – at the end of the first half, the quarterback for Air Force was 0-for-1. They had 0 yards passing. Everything's the wing. You know, triple off. They run everything. So it's always a tough game to prepare for. But, yeah, so both teams are undefeated. And if you look at their schedules, you know, I think USF has Houston. San Diego State has Boise State. So there's a great chance both those teams could sit at the end undefeated, being those, you know, six, seven, eight seeds that don't make the playoffs. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So another good day. I did give a hat tip. I thought ESPN Game Day in Times Square was pretty cool. Did you guys happen to see any of that? That was kind of a neat little atmosphere, because there was people from every program represented.
Was the Wazoo flag there?
It was there, yes.
Okay, I'm just checking. I always have to ask.
It was there in the back. So let's talk NFL, guys. This is the second week in a row we've gone early. But a couple teams stood out to me last week. Todd, one of them's in your backyard. That was a heck of a game on Monday night to open up the Mercedes-Benz Center. Falcons look strong.
That was Sunday, right, Sean? Sunday night.
That was Sunday night. Yeah, Sunday. I'm sorry, not Monday.
Yeah. Falcons look strong. I'm not sure quite yet how good Green Bay is. I think they're still kind of – the jury's still out of them. But, boy, I think the Falcons organization, I think Matt Ryan, I think the coaching staff are doing a great job with you making the Super Bowl loss into a goal, into a positive. I'm trying to find the right words, but they're using this, and every time they get asked about the Super Bowl, every time, and Matt Ryan finally said, "Hey, we lost the game. That's last year. We're focused on this year." That's what they're saying to the media. But for sports teams, have an amazing way of motivating themselves, right? It's us against the world, and I think Atlanta right now has that attitude. So right now, I think they're. Got it. I think they're the number one in the power rankings, or at least top three. So,
and that big game today, they go to Detroit, where they're three-point favorites.
And Detroit's not bad either. I think they're more up and coming, but they're winning ball games too. So yeah, huge game today at Detroit. And when you're favored three, and I think the home team automatically gets 3 points. I think that's the general rule. So for Atlanta to be favored three, I think the experts think they're going to handle it. So we'll see.
The over under 51, that's looking like a shootout according to Vegas. So, which I agree. Stafford's playing 6 touchdowns, his first 2 games, not too bad. So,
well, Bill, how about your team? Let's go to your team. The Buccaneers going on the road and getting points at Minnesota.
Yeah. Not much right there. It's 1 point, I think.
1 point, right.
That's what's at now, but, and it was, they were getting,
that's some nice respect though, for what they think is going to be a good offensive team going up against Minnesota's defense is really good.
Yeah. And so is the Buccaneers. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll see how Jameis does. And I think, you know, just I'll throw a name out there. Watch out for OJ Howard a little bit. You know, he's had a little bit of a slow start, but I think, you know, Winston and Howard have been working out a lot together in the off season. He's a big Kellen Winslow, Antonio Gates. Sorry for the Charger references. That has some speed and can line up out wide. It'll be fun. Combine him with Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson. They really put together a great set of skill players. So it'll be fun to watch.
And Bradford's out that game, right, Bill?
Don't know yet. I hadn't seen the official. They thought he could be back. We'll see. Not sure.
But what a difference Minnesota looked week one and week two with Bradford and without Bradford. Wow.
Yeah, big difference. So
yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the I don't do a lot of gambling, Todd. I'm looking at there's 9 road favorites this week. That seems a lot, or is that pretty normal in the NFL?
No, I don't think that's normal. NFL is an interesting animal. I think it's rare. You got a 13.5-point spread with New England. You got a couple sevens in there. But if you look. Usually the NFL spreads are anywhere from 1 to 4, right? So
right.
I think it makes it a little harder. It's harder to predict. So a buddy of mine once said, hey, in the NFL, if it's 5 and under, don't even worry about the spread. Just pick the winner. But obviously when it's 13.5 points, you got to factor. And that's got more of a college feel to it, right?
You know? Sure. Yeah. And I do want to say my Browns go on the road as favorites. Not my Browns. Ohio's Browns. Well, they play the Colts. They play the Colts.
He brought up hash browns, Bill.
That's awesome. Yeah, the Colts are a mess, right? I mean,
Colts are not good.
The whole thing that's going down with Luck, right? It's like he's. I think he, if they're, if once again, if the experts are saying what's true, he wants out. He's tired. He's tired of Ursay not providing the talent around him. And there's nothing more frustrating, right? For this is a guy who should be leading teams in the playoffs every year. He's that good a quarterback. But when you don't have an offensive line to protect you, forget it, right? And so, see.
Hey, so Bill, your Chargers are home dogs, Bill.
Who?
Your LA Chargers?
Oh, sorry, you cut out. Go ahead. Go ahead, Sean. I lost you there. Or Todd.
That's all right.
Okay,
hey, good. Here's the question of the day. Will the Bengals score their first touchdown of the year at Green Bay?
Ooh. Oh.
You have to say yes, because eventually they have to score a touchdown, right?
A.J. Green has to catch a pass and make a move somewhere, right?
How
long does Marvin Lewis have? I mean,
I think he has – if they don't score a touchdown today, I think he stays in Green Bay. I don't know how much longer you can wait on this guy. He's not doing anything with them, and the Steelers go on the road as 7.5-point favorites at Chicago. They can jump out to the 3-0. Lead in the not 3-0 lead, but 3-0 in that division. So,
hey Sean, real quick, I heard a stat: if you start out 0-2 in the NFL, you only have a 10% chance of making the playoffs. And 0-4 is like you might as well just
1%.
Well, the Chargers started 0-4 one year and actually came back and won the division.
And that's so rare, right?
Yeah, super rare, yeah.
Unbelievable. So these first early weeks, if you're kind of bored, look at the 0-2 teams.
Oh.
And 0-3, 0-4, you just almost never make the playoffs. And it's so weird. It's a 16-game season, and that first four games are so important. So anyway.
Yeah. And a big Monday night game, right? Cardinals-Cowboys.
Cardinals-Cowboys,
always a huge rivalry game. It seems weird. I mean, that's a rivalry game because they're in different – conferences, but they used to be in the same conference when they were with Saints.
Refresh my memory. Who did the Cowboys get crushed by last week?
Denver.
Denver.
I didn't know Denver is that good or Dallas is that bad. Right now,
it's a home game for the Cardinals. Sorry, go ahead.
I'd love Arizona in that game.
I do
Dallas
too.
Dallas is getting three, and they looked miserable last week.
Have you guys been paying any attention to the FedEx Cup? It's just at such a weird time. It doesn't really attract my attention. Maybe because last year Jordan Spieth kind of had this great year going or two years ago. And last year's event was fun. I'm not sure why I watched last year's because it was that great shootout between Rory and who was in the – and DJ basically needed Rory to miss a putt on 18 and he would have won the $10 million, but instead Rory won it.
This tournament, you know, you've got Paul Casey's, you know, got a two-shot lead on a couple of – you think about Xander Schauffele. Or Kevin Kisner.
Pardon my ignorance. So, is the tournament winner at Eastlake win the FedEx Cup, or do they still rank them? So you can finish seventh, but still win the FedEx Cup.
Still ranked. In fact, they're the last time the FedEx Cup winner was not the Tour Championship winner was in 2009. Mickelson won the tournament, and Tiger Woods claimed the FedEx Cup. Yeah. It looks like right now. Here's what I'm reading right now. Casey needs to win and have Spieth finish in a three-way tie for fourth or worse, along with a couple other things that has to happen.
And Spieth is currently tied for 13th.
Right, but if the tournament ended yesterday, Casey would have won the FedEx Cup.
Okay.
So Kisner, a great day. He shot 64, and then he jumped on a private helicopter to get over to Athens for the game.
I was going
to
tell you that. They introduced him in halftime. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Yeah. So I think right now, I don't have time to read through all this while we're on our podcast, but
right.
I think if Justin Thomas can maybe just play well and maybe beat John Rahm, I think Justin Thomas wins. As long as he finishes above Rahm and Johnson. So, yeah.
So that'll be fun to watch. They'll have that updated throughout the tournament. I'll definitely have that on one of the screens this afternoon while I'm watching football. So it'll be definitely worth it.
Any thoughts on the NBA trade that happened yesterday?
Hmm.
Carmelo to the Oklahoma City Thunder. You have Carmelo, Russell, Westbrook and Paul George all playing for Billy Donovan's Thunder. I think they're still just have one basketball to share.
How much gas does Melo have left in the tank? But maybe this is – maybe being a role player with a bunch of two studs is perfect for him. I mean, it may be lightning in a bottle. So,
it's still not enough. It's still not enough to catch the Warriors.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just no way. So
I agree. baseball, anything good happening in baseball, Bill, this week? How's your fantasy have any chance? Did Rhys Hoskins get hurt?
No, but he's in a mini slump. He hasn't homered in like 3 days. It's awesome. I think my hopes fizzled away when Zach Greinke got mauled by the Marlins 2 days ago. I needed him to pitch well and get a win for me the way the numbers work out. I'm now down to a 1.6% chance of coming back and winning the league. But second place feels like it's sewn up. So I guess that's a good thing.
There's a chance, right, Bill?
Yeah. Saying there's a chance. barely. 1.6% chance. As far as baseball goes, you've got, the Brewers trying their best to make it a race, but I think that's kind of a done deal, right? I mean, there's a 4.5-game lead with seven games to go. So it looks like the Cubs came back and did what they had to do to get in the playoffs. But I don't know, in my opinion, I don't know how you got the Indians playing at this incredibly high level. Indians and Astros seem to be the cream of the crop in the AL. And in the National League, I'd love to see a Washington-LA rematch, right, in the National League, because those teams are just playing fantastic.
Todd, anything happening in the world of soccer? We're, what about 4 weeks into the season?
Todd, can I give you my soccer stat of the week? I studied for you. You ready?
Do it, man. I love it. Go.
How does Man City score 21 goals in six games? What is that all about?
So there's six games in the season, Sean, and Man City is dominating. They put up a couple 6-0s, a couple 5-0s.
Wow.
They have a draw in there. So
is Spurrier coaching them?
That's right. I got to hang a 50 on there, right? Man City seems to be the cream. Man United's not far behind.
Right.
So it's the typical blue of Man City versus the red of Man U battling. Crystal Palace is 0-0-6. So 0-0-6 with 0 points.
Wow.
So gosh, there's 35 games, but I'm reading, and this can't be right, goals for, I don't think they've scored a goal this year. So I'll do a little research. That's got to be miserable, right? That's got to be a miserable season. What's cool about, we talked about it before, but Liverpool's already out of the League Cup. They lost to Leicester City on Wednesday, but they beat Leicester City 3-2 in Premier League play yesterday. So always something going on with international breaks and tournaments. But, yeah, only six games in. Right now, Manchester City looks to be the cream of the crop for sure.
Well, let's talk about the week ahead, guys. Bill? Good episode with Teresa Boardman. I really like her. She's got a lot of good energy and a cool story. So who's coming up on the Real Estate Sessions, which once again, let me just put a plug in, the best podcast for real estate. If you're not listening to it, I've been doing it for over 2 years now. And it is a absolutely great podcast. Who you got coming up on probably about episode, 108? Something
like that. 107. 107. I've got, I did a live podcast at Realtor.com Results Summit back in Vegas. Marcy James and I sat down in the lobby
of
the Cosmopolitan, and a really neat story with Marcy. And she's with Realtor.com, handles a lot of their social media outreach for all of their products. And so I had a great time with her. So that'll be episode 107.
Give us an overview of the Realtor.com Summit event.
Yeah, really well done event, right? So a quick 2 days. It felt like an Inman Connect from 2003. Does that make sense, Sean? You would get that, right? So a smaller version of Inman. About between 700 and 800 registered attendees. And because it's a Realtor.com event, there is a heavy Realtor.com kind of play. They definitely present some of the things they're doing, and they're doing some great things. Sean, you'll get this. They've created a product that takes basically Five Street for lead kind of generation and acquisition, Top Producer, which is your CRM, and Resio, which is a transaction management tool, and put them into one product called Real Suite. And about 500 people at the conference signed up to be beta testers for this product.
That's cool.
So they could test it out. I thought that was a wonderful marketing opportunity for Realtor.com. And so we'll see how that plays out. I'm actually going to, I've got a good word in with Suzanne Roy and a couple others to try and become kind of educated and maybe even train on that product. I think it helps me in my business. So
sure.
We'll see how that happens. As technology, as you know, is ever changing, and different people have different kind of tolerances for technology. How's that?
Right.
So I think that'll be fun to watch. But I thought it was a really well done event. And for the price, Sean, I mean, you can get there as cheap as $99 for the whole conference. So I thought it was really well done.
Good. And I'm sure you got to see a lot of our good friends in the business. I saw Chalmers. I know you and Chalmers were at a table, he told me. And
was that Chalmers?
Chalmers.
Yeah. Chalmers.
He's picking me up at the airport in a couple hours.
In Boston. Good. Whatever he tells you, the kiss on the cheek, he wanted me to do that. I just want you to know that wasn't my idea. He begged me. So you can see the picture. It wasn't. You know,
you're protesting too much, Bill.
I doth protest too much. Yeah. Go
ahead. Todd, what do you got coming up this week, bud?
This week, a little fun. So hide the wives and girlfriends. I am a proud member of the Doors and Hardware Institute, DHI. And we have our annual, thank you. I mean, I'm warning you. I mean, it's a lady getter.
Are you on a committee?
No, I'm just a good active member.
Okay.
I'm not ruling out anything in the future. I do help my buddy, Ted Capreas. He's on the golf committee of one. But I help him set up our annual golf tournament on Tuesday at my home course at Windermere, Sean. So
nice.
That's going to be a little fun. So it's always nice to get out and swing the stick and conduct business at the same time. So that's the highlight of my week. And as long as we're pubbing a podcast, Bill, I'm sure you'd agree with me, Carp's Corner Monday morning match doesn't get much better than that, right?
I promote it all the time. I tell every class I talk to check that thing out. Yeah. Amazing.
Thank you, guys.
Amazing.
Last week was TaylorMade with the Cleveland Indians and Tyree Cleveland, right? The Cleveland Magic. So thanks, Todd. Guys, for me, I'm heading off to my third week in a row of some speaking engagements. I'm heading off to Boston this week. I'm speaking at the Massachusetts Association of Realtors Convention tomorrow on Cape Cod. And then Jeff Chalmers, a good buddy of ours, Bill, who's in the mortgage industry, will be heading to Fenway Park on Tuesday catch a Red Sox game. And that might be their magic number. Maybe they'll all see him clinch it on Tuesday if they haven't already this weekend. And then I head off to Chicago later in the week to facilitate a leadership retreat for the Coldwell Banker NRT company in Chicago. So another good week of activity. Guys, it's always fun. Thanks for jumping on early with me. Don't forget, guys, you can check us out on Twitter at StareDownCast. Todd, Bill, and I are all active on there at Todd Meiniger, at Bill Risser, and at Sean Karp. And we'll look forward to catching you on the web, on social, or here on the Stare Down. Every Sunday.